Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, cause it's root for the home team. They don't win, it's a shame, cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And welcome to Let's Get Two. And I am your host, James Christopher. And I'm sure that you're all, that those of you who are regular viewers to this show, regular listeners, are logging in to see how I am. Some of you are probably hoping I'm miserable because I think there's like a deep-seated dislike on the part of some of the people on baseball Twitter to make sure that I'm like either in pain or hopefully doing okay with the news of Justin Verlander. Look, we're going to get to Justin Verlander in this episode. We are going to get to the fact that there's already an outbreak in major league teams in this episode, but we've got a really great and positive episode for you. And I'm going to open the show and I'm going to talk a little bit about Kennedy Metcalf, my granddaughter. She was born in March, but because of the Rona, all of our attempts to either get them down here or get up there to see them had been delayed. Well, we finally made it happen. Jessica and I flew to Oregon this weekend, and it was so great to see Jordan, to see Max, and to see Braxton, and of course, to meet little Kennedy. And we even got her out to her very first ball game. We visited the Portland Pickles, and it was a great time. The Pickles are another summer collegiate league. They have a great following. They have a great brand. And they, again, like the other team we're going to talk to on this episode, the Savannah Bananas, saw there was a need for baseball, a need for collegiate players to play, and they took it upon themselves to do it safe, to do it smart. They played in a different stadium than what they usually play in, so we'll get back there next year. But, you know, to the Portland Pickles, we had a great time. Love the bobblehead. And the mascot was so good with Braxton. And it's what we needed and what we really wanted out of Kennedy's first baseball game. It was really supposed to be her fourth or fifth baseball game. We had Astros tickets and then we had Round Rock tickets. But we had a super, just a really good time with the family out at the ball game. So to the Portland Pickles, you guys put on a great show. We're hoping to have you on the show eventually, but thank you so much for making some really great memories. And someday I'll give her this bobblehead and tell her all about the time that she went to her very first baseball game.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
So we are excited. Finally, we are going to have one of my favorite brands in baseball. We got Barry Aldridge from the Savannah Bananas. I would argue probably the 32nd most popular baseball team in any level of baseball.
I think you got to probably go the that. I like
yeah,
that.
You got to think that's the first.
I'm going to start using that.
I would. I mean, you got to think probably the 30 MLB teams, and then probably Durham because of the movie, and then you guys. Tell me a little bit about you, though, man. How did you end up being the vice president for the Savannah Bananas?
Quick fun fact for you before I go into that. My dog's name is Crash, so you're probably right. Durham is probably, they probably are a bit above us.
Love we were going to get to talk about a little bit.
Always in, always in contact with them, trying to figure out what they're doing to push the envelope. So a lot of good things to say about them. But so anyway, yeah, my path to the Bananas. I was a college baseball player here in Savannah. Had really no dreams or aspirations of getting into front office baseball. I thought I was going to teach and coach like a lot of my peers, and my dad did that. Both parents were teachers, so I felt like I had a lot of leg up in that field to like get some opportunities quickly. And as I finished up, the Bananas moved to town, and I thought, you know, this could be a cool opportunity. Like there, I didn't know much about collegiate summer league baseball because I never played it. I couldn't afford to go off and play somewhere every summer. I went home and worked so that I could pay my rent for the next semester back at school. And so I come back and I'm playing my senior year. The Bananas come to town, and I'm just like, they're small. Of course they'll need a little help. You know, like I could intern there, and it was just an opportunity to have like one last summer around baseball before I went into teaching and coaching. And I had a couple job offers on the table to teach and coach, and fell in love with the bananas, man. I fell in love that summer with this part of the game, this kind of game, and just pushing the envelope in these weird, wacky ways. And not just the weird, wacky stuff, the entertainment, but also the, or not just the weird, wacky, like entertainment stuff, but also the business savviness of the bananas and the way we go about our business and the way that, you know, we market and the way that we sell, slash let people buy, which is kind of our whole philosophy. So, they offered me a job at the end of the internship. And at that point I had a much better understanding of what the bananas actually were and of what the potential was. And it seemed like a great fit, and it has been thus far. I started selling tickets and, well, I moved on to director of tickets a couple years later, and then came on as got promoted to vice president just this past year.
Well, congrats on the promotion, by the way.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
One of the things that I've noticed, I actually just discovered Collegiate Summer League this year. It's the second season of our show, and I was a Houston kid, so I didn't know anything about minor league baseball because I was going to the Astrodome at every opportunity. One of the things I love about it is you have all that fun stuff, and the bananas really stand out. The kilts game, the first base coach, just the look of the team. But you also have kids that you can tell are playing for something. They're playing for that opportunity down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that's always kind of been strange, I guess, because like when I'm in high school, when I was playing in college, we were very accessible to our 10 fans that showed up, you know, like we'd come out of the dugouts after the games and talk with everybody. But one thing I noticed when I started coming to games in Savannah, when I was in college at the Sand Nats games, was that, you know, there's a fourth wall there where you're not really interacting with the players that much. And social media has done a great job of breaking down that wall, but it's still not face-to-face. It's not that much personal interaction. We tear that fourth wall down with a mallet, and just our players become parts of the community for the months they're here. They get ingrained with their host family. Some of them are still to this day extremely tight with their host families. We had a player a couple years ago get drafted, and he was not even at his parents' house. He was at his host family's house when he got drafted. And it wasn't because he was still here playing. He had driven down. He was not even a banana anymore. He had just driven down to spend time with them. So breaking down that fourth wall has been super important for us, and getting fans and players more connected. Now, obviously, this summer has been a bit more challenging with face-to-face contact and obviously hugging, touching, and high fives, autographs, all that. But we'd like to think that we're still doing a pretty decent job of letting them be connected and at least share the same spaces from a socially distant, you know, in a socially distant capacity.
Let's talk about that for a second, because, you know, 2020, well, I would like to say my life hasn't been the same since Howie Kendrick hit a ball over the wall in October of 2019, but 2020 has sucked, man. How important was it for you, for the bananas, to be there for your community? Because you guys have done it in spades.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, safety's always been at the forefront. We've not made – so one misconception that I think a lot of people have about businesses that are operational during this time is that the businesses are coming up with everything and all their policies and all their stuff. It's a joint effort. It's a side-by-side effort with your local health departments, with your state health departments and stuff like that. So I want to make sure to reiterate that, like, we don't claim to be the health officials. We're just bringing them along with us and asking them, hey, how would you do this? How would you do this? So for us, knowing we were going to bring them along with us and only do the things that they recommended, not having a season was never really on the table for us until we were told we couldn't safely have one. But we've never been told that. I mean, there have been people that had that opinion, and there have been the professionals we've worked with who have told us, because you're outdoor, because you've cut your capacity by 50, 60%, because of these things, you're going to be okay if you take the right steps. And so for us, as long as we had the professionals, the people in our community, in our state, and our local governments that were on board and were, you know, helping us make it the safe environment, not having a season was never really an option. So we always wanted to be able to do something for whoever we could, whatever we safely could do. And, you know, we've been doing that. We're allowed to do up to 50%, but I'll tell you right now, we haven't done 50% yet because we're not even, we are only selling about 50% and letting the redemption be what it is. Obviously we want to help those, you know, we want to have people come out, but we're not willing to sell 60, 70, 80% of our total capacity to try to, you know, get 50% here. It's not about that for us right now. It's about providing a safe, socially distanced, environment for as many people as we can safely have it for.
One of the things that you guys announced before all this happened was that you took all your advertising down from your outfield wall because of how well you guys had done.
What a year to do that, right? What a year.
What a year to do that, right? But you know, why is that important? Like what, like talk to me about how that decision even came about, because I think it's great. But you know, why was that important to you guys?
Sure. So why do you people pay the extra $2 to choose the ad-free option on Hulu? When you give the customer, when you give a fan, a customer, anyone, when you give them a choice, they will always choose not to be advertised to. They will always choose no commercials. They will always choose not to be bombarded by, you know, just ridiculous color schemes and sayings and advertisements and things that they don't increase the fan experience. And if they're not increasing the fan experience, they are hurting it. There is no middle ground. There is no, okay, it's just existing out there. Like, no, if it's not helping it, it means that there's something that could maybe be there that would help it. Therefore, it's hurting it. And so we've been very fortunate that our ticket sales is the vast majority of our revenue. We do great merchandise. We do a lot of stuff. But most teams, it's kind of the opposite. They do 70, 80% revenue with sponsorships. And they spend 70 to 80% of their time focusing on those sponsors and focusing on how to make a very, very, very tiny percentage of their fans happy. We've kind of been the opposite. We have 70, 80% of our revenue come from tickets, and specifically mini plans, 5-game plans, 10-game plans, full season tickets. So we spend 70, 80, 90% of our time focusing on how to make all of our fans happy, how to push the envelope, how to increase their experience year over year. And we just kind of looked at ourselves in the mirror and we're like, we wouldn't buy this anymore. Like, it's not that we didn't believe we were delivering good stuff for the sponsors. It's not like we felt like we were ripping them off. We just decided like we wouldn't buy it. So let's buy into our own thought process and our own brand and let's quit selling it, because we can immediately recoup a lot of it in the same ticket sales that were allocated. Did we recoup all of it? No, we lost, we willingly handed over about 30% of our, you know, revenue for the year, a little less than that actually, but we willingly handed that over. And had no real plan other than ticket sales to recoup it. But it's forcing us to try new things and be innovative and, get outside of our comfort zone and get outside of the industry standard or the industry norm, which is, if you know much about us, you know much about Jesse and Emily, then you understand that that's kind of right up our alley.
So talk then a little bit about, you know, you guys pivoted, you realize you can't have a full stadium, even though you're used to sellouts. So you have the banana, you have the games on, you have the insiders. A little bit about you guys have to be the only non-MLB team offering something like that. So where did that come from and how's that gone so far?
Sure. So, when we first found out we were going to have to quarantine as an office, you know, it came at a weird time, like March, I think March 15th, right around then. We were told we were going to have to quarantine. We didn't know how long. So while we were in our offices, we kind of just had a State of the Union conversation with everybody. We had a 12 o'clock Zoom call every day, Monday through Friday, where our whole team got on together and we just talked about some of our wins. But we held each other accountable too. We talked about, well, we can sit here all day and talk about all the things we can't do, or we can start talking about things that we can do. And you know, because of our ballpark being so old, built in 1926, whole nine yards, we've generally leaned in on the historic, the old school when it comes to like ticketing or how to watch the game or, you know, stuff like that. This is forcing us to get more ingrained with technology and do a better job of not fighting it, but embracing it. And so one of the big principles we went into quarantine with was, let's make sure we come out of quarantine with more fans than we went in. Meaning if people are sitting at home and they're watching Facebook or they're on Instagram or they're watching TikTok or whatever, let's make sure we're dominating those platforms. We don't have the time and energy to go out and sell tickets right now. No one's, not the time and energy, rather the demand. No one's buying a big group outing when we're all sitting in quarantine because they don't know if we're going to be out yet. So we all leaned in on content. Everybody had different pieces and added things to their workload that normally they'd never do. I was doing two podcasts, you know, an Instagram live, and we were shooting videos and stuff like that constantly. Like we did the, what do you call it? Dancing with myself video where everybody did, you know, selfie style, and we put it out and it did great. We got, you know, a couple hundred thousand views on it. Bananas Insiders just became a product of that. We started saying like, well, what's another way that we can maybe do something for our fans, make a couple bucks in the process, but that is ridiculously affordable. And I'll give you an example about how affordable it is. The CPL this year, our league, you know, love them to death. They decided they wanted to help the teams out that weren't going to be able to sell as many tickets. All the teams that, you know, all the teams can't sell as many tickets. So they said, we're going to ask viewers to pay for the live stream this year. They were like, $60, you can get everything a whole season. For $40, you can get one team's every game. And then for $5 per game, you can get any game you want, just like one game. We were like, okay, so we're going to do, Facebook sent us a message saying that we had been picked for a beta version of like a paywall feature. It was essentially just gave us the opportunity. And that's where we kind of got the idea for Bananas Insiders. Can we make a Facebook group that is a pay, that has a paywall that we live stream our games? And from there, it's just taken off. We decided it was going to be super affordable, $4.99 a month. And you can opt out anytime. So for the same price, you get one CPL game with the exact same stream, mind you. You can get, you know, a month's worth of Bananas games for the exact, for one penny less, technically. From there, we got an amazing broadcaster named Biko Scala, who is all in on just doing the weird, wacky, crazy. I mean, he's so into just goofing off and having a good time and just being a regular person. I think broadcasters can sometimes get a little too stiff and a little too broadcasterish. Biko's the same guy. He's just the guy you want to hang out with. When you listen to him, you're like, man, I would be his friend. And I'm telling you right now, you absolutely would. He is the nicest guy. And, yeah, Bananas Insiders is just taking off from there. We started challenging ourselves. We're doing drone live stream drone shots.
Yeah.
We're doing, you know, 6-7 camera angles. We have a one in the dugout. And pro tip for everybody out there, the iPhone 11 now shoots in 4K 60 frames per second. So you don't need thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment. We had to turn the quality of our stream down so that it did, so that people could stream it without buffering. That's how good the quality on like these iPhone 11s and stuff like that are. We have a kid that sits in there with an Osmo to keep it stabilized, and he walks with batters to the plate and stuff like that. And he'll like walk out to the mound with the pitcher, pitching coach, to talk to the pitcher and stuff like that in certain scenarios. So, yeah, we just started pushing the envelope, seeing what worked. We're miking up players every game. We mic up umpires every few games. We mic up anybody that wants to be mic'd up, basically. So, yeah, we're really excited about it. We like the future for Bananas Insiders, and we've picked up almost 1,000 followers. 1,000 people have made that commitment, you know, to pay and watch the game online.
Well, I'm definitely a proud member of that group. One of the things about really non MLB level baseball is they'll talk about how like we don't really care about what's happening on the field. It's about fan experience. One of the things I love about the Bananas is you actually guys do also care about winning. And I think part of that is really played out in the rivalry with the Macon Bacon. And I mean, that's as intense as you know, Yankees, Giants, no, sorry, Dodgers, Giants or whatever. How much fun is that to kind of go back and forth with those guys talking trash?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. We obviously love them, and they've kind of had our number this year, you know, but, you know, they're due because we've been beating the brakes off of them for the last 2 years. Got to throw that little plug in there. But no, man, they're good guys. Like, I have no ill words to say towards them as an office or a front office. Like, they're good people. We are close to them. We're only 2 hours away. We've worked. Some of us have worked with some of them. Like, we know, obviously, the models are lining up very similarly. Food names, funny merchandise, like it's obviously an intentional thing that they've kind of aligned with a lot of the things that they've seen work here, which makes sense. And they do some things of their own that do really well or some that don't. we don't own them. That's a misconception. A lot of people think that we own the Macon Bacon as well, and that's just not true. But it's nice having someone in the league that gets it as well. There are other teams in our league that do an awesome job that are just in different situations, and they would love to be able to try and do some of the things we do, but their markets aren't right, or the ownership is a little more restrictive, or just focused on other things. And it's really nice to have another team in the league that aligns very closely with what you're trying to put out, because then you can have fun with all the other stuff. And then to your note about the baseball, yeah, we really do care about the baseball, man. That's a misconception, is that our baseball suffers because of all the stuff our players are asked to do and all the stuff that our players, you know, have to take on, like doing player dances and, you know, doing so much engagement with the community and fans. But Dr. Curtis Sproul, a professor at Georgia Southern, did a study a couple years ago on every single D1 athlete in the CPL. And the only team that had a positive correlation, the only team that had a positive correlation on performance for those athletes was us. He looked at pitchers and hitters. And there's actually a great video on YouTube, I believe, called Bananas Play Better. It's about 10 minutes long. I challenge you to go watch that, because he's back doing the study again with us this year because he wants to validate it and actually put it out into a scientific journal. Hmm. The thesis behind it is essentially that priming the environment and getting people outside of their comfort zone is super beneficial to athletic performance. And I couldn't agree more as an athlete. I wish I could have gotten to be a part of some of this stuff, and I never was. So I'm a little jealous, but I'm also really intrigued and excited to see what Curtis comes up with this second time.
Well, Barry, I wanted to thank you for being on the show, man. Like I said, we're big Savannah Banana fans. I buy gear pretty regularly, but good luck the rest of the way out, and maybe we'll have you back on next season to preview what will hopefully be a more normal Savannah Banana season.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, man. James, you'll have to get down here for a game one day, buddy.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
So okay, we're excited to take a peek into college baseball and the Collegiate Summer League through the eyes of Steve Parkhurst, who is one of the men behind CougarsBaseballBeat.com. Steve, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on.
So we met at Round Rock Media Day when they transitioned to the Texas Collegiate League. But tell me, or tell the people, I guess, why should people really give college baseball a second or third look if they've sort of just not paid attention to the sport much?
Yeah, well, if they haven't paid attention much, or they drifted, let's say, over the last several years, college baseball has gotten much better than it used to be. There were years where it was not uncommon for there to be 12 to 10 games and stuff like that, really high scoring. And they've deadened the bats a little bit. That's not to say that they're as pure as wooden bats, but they've deadened the bats a bit. And the baseball is just really pure. And some of the pitch that also means that the pitching gets better, because pitchers don't have to worry about every single mistake leaving the ballpark like they had to do, 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's just a really pure game. And right now, there's a lot to be said for a lot of these kids. They're in baseball year round now. They play fall ball. And this is even before they get to college. So there's something to be said for maybe there's too much, but the other side of that is that the kids in college now, most of the kids that make a team deserve to make a team. And you're talking about a roster stacked of really good players. And so it's just a good product when college baseball is everywhere, whether it's D1 or any division in NAIA, if you're down here in Texas, other conferences. But I mean, there's college baseball everywhere. And if you just want the experience, I mean, you go to any ballpark, and I think you're probably like me, you kind of get to a ballpark, you open up your car door and you get out, you kind of hear the music, you feel the breeze, you just know it's baseball. And it doesn't matter if it's 7-year-olds playing or if it's a good product like college baseball or a lower level product of college baseball, but it's just great. It's a great time. So it's really worth paying attention to.
So your focus is the University of Houston Cougars. What do they look? I mean, it seems like they were primed to have a good season, and of course that season was cut short. But what does the future of Cougar baseball look like?
It really looks good. This was a really young team coming into this year. They had lost a bunch of seniors from last season, and then they lost one of their top juniors, Jared Triolo, who was drafted in the second round by the Pittsburgh Pirates. So the team that was coming in this year excuse me, was a lot of really young players, and they really, they kind of keep building. I mean, these, this year has been really chaotic as far as the commitment classes and then the transfer portal and all that. But they're getting a lot of really good, young, talented kids. Excuse me again. And so they've just got a bunch of really good high school talent coming in and young kids. So the future looks really bright as far as, you know, whether they play in 2021 at all, you know, anybody's guess at this point. So all these guys need playing time. And that was one of the really good things about the Texas Collegiate League. And frankly, there's seven Cougars who have gotten to play in the Texas Collegiate League this summer. So that's a good thing. I mean, these guys getting reps and playing a little bit different baseball. I mean, again, we talked about the metal bats earlier, the aluminum bats, but now you go to the wooden bats of the Texas League, which I'm really liking and I'm finding fascinating. But you talk about kids who kind of go back to finding a pure swing, because with the wooden bat, it's more about you've got to make contact, as opposed to with the metal bats. It's like, if you can just get under it a little bit, you can launch it 320 feet out of the ballpark. And,
right.
So yeah, it's been fun, but the future looks good. It's just a matter of whenever they get to play again.
When the future is. How important is this, you know, is this your first experience with summer league ball, or have you followed it before?
Yeah, I followed it usually in the summer, like after the college season would end, I would start to kind of do the completion of the high school baseball and stuff like that. So this was my first real experience with like day to day being in the ballpark for the college baseball, like I have been with the Texas League this year, Texas Collegiate League.
How important is this going to become to athletes when, you know, baseball is an ecosystem, and if you upset one part of it, then there's a ripple effect. And with the contraction of the minor leagues and the shortening of the draft, how important are these summer leagues like the Texas Collegiate League going to be to guys like Ryan Hernandez, who we both know, who's been on our show, to making sure that guy gets an opportunity to get drafted later on?
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredibly important, especially the wooden bat league, which I think is really key, because these types of leagues are going to give scouts and the guys who are in charge of drafts a real good idea about who can project well. You know, you're always going to worry about the kid who's never played with the wooden bat and hits, you know, 15 to 20 home runs in a college baseball year. How is he going to translate? But you bring him down to something like the Texas Collegiate League, or like you said, Cape Cod, in any of the rest of these leagues that got shut down this year, and you really do get a more pure feel for what they can do if you draft them and put them in the system, and it gives you a better idea of, okay, well, you know, if we draft this kid, we can work on these two things, and he can be a 300 hitter and you know, 80 RBIs a year, and we can put him in the system and we can project him, as opposed to the metal bats, and if that's all they've ever done, you have no idea what you're getting at that point.
Yeah, physics is a little different off of a metal bat. Right,
exactly. Yeah.
What has impressed you the most about some of the Cougars that you've seen take that first step? It's been fun to watch the Almendarez family, watching Ryan, watching all these guys. What has been some of the things that's impressed you most this season?
It's really got to be mainly because the Cougars, they only have, of the seven players they have in the Texas Collegiate League, six of them are offensive guys. They play deep, they don't pitch. So only one guy's a pitcher, and he's actually on he's on a different team. He's playing for the Brazos Valley Bombers, as opposed to the six Cougars that are on that are playing for Round Rock. The thing that really has impressed me though is, yeah, there you go. The Bomber shirt. Yeah. You know, the Flying Chonklas, they have some of the best merchandise in the entire. I think you and I have talked about that. It's outstanding.
Yeah, those guys are brilliant.
Yeah, and you're wearing a Bomber shirt. I actually like those. I saw their media guys in San Antonio last week were wearing those shirts, and they're actually pretty sharp shirts. So I do like those. But the offense has really impressed me because I didn't know what to expect from most of these kids. Even Ryan, frankly, Ryan Hernandez, I didn't know what to expect from any of them coming to a wood bat league, having just seen them in college baseball, and that was only a 15 game sample for some of these kids, and then they took all these months off, and then they practically, I think they had about a week of practice before the Texas Collegiate League season actually started. So I've been impressed with the contact from the Cougars kids. Now, overall with the league in general, I've been really impressed with the pitching. But I've been impressed as far as the Cougars kids goes with the contact, because they've got some freshmen who Dylan Post is one who's a backup catcher. He's been playing really well at putting the bat on the ball. Another kid, Cole Turney, who was at San Jack and is a transfer coming into University of Houston, has made good power contact. Again, Ryan, we've talked about Ryan's gone opposite field even with the wooden bat. So, I mean, it's been impressive. That's been the thing that has been. It's one of those things where when you're sitting at the ballpark and you see that kind of thing, you kind of go, wow, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, you know, and the Dell is not a typically easy place to hit a home run.
Not at all.
There's been some no doubters. All right, so as we wrap up then, let's take a look at the Hairy Men, who I know we both have a pretty vested interest in. There are three teams within a game of first place with, I think, six games to go. So it's going to get tense. What do you think the Hairy Men need to do to actually win the South Division title?
I think the key word there is they're going to have to win. The next six games for all these teams, they're all beating each other up. They're all playing each other. So the Hairy Men now are going to host Brazos Valley for three games, and they need to win because Brazos Valley's in first place. So every time you can, you know, get a win there, that's a full game change. And then they play a weekend series. I don't know how much you followed the weekend series with them and San Antonio, but they do this bizarre thing where, to cut down on travel, they play one game in Round Rock, then they go to San Antonio the next day, then they come back to Round Rock the other time. So they have three games to close out the season with San Antonio, who's currently in second place in the division. So the Round Rock team sitting at third place, they've got to win. They've got to win ball games. They've got the Round Rock team's got good pitching, especially early in the week, the early starters. So it's going to be a matter of kind of that later in the week, that San Antonio series, putting it all together and winning ball games. That's what they really need to do.
All right, Steve, thanks for being on Let's Get Two. I'd love to have you back on before college baseball season starts next year to preview the Cougars.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Love to do it.
Go, go Astros, a focus on H-Town Hardball.
We are joined with Andy Tomcheson on an emergency Go, Go Astros. Truth be told, I had another Astros fan booked today, but when things actually happen, we go to you first. But I want to say something to the audience out there. You were supposed to be in Hawaii today, yes?
Yes. I should have landed yesterday. Well, thank you for making me feel welcome, like I'm there. I mean, this is exactly like Honolulu.
It's exactly like Honolulu for you, buddy. So, rather than sitting on the beach with your beloved, you got to read the conflicting reports about Justin Verlander. The Chronicle is still going to die on the hill that he's immediately out for the season. First impressions of the injury for you.
Well, I mean, first of all, the Chronicle seems to be doubling down because they updated the original article like at 7:15 last night Central Time, and just insisting that somebody's lying without calling out names, just that they've got two sources within the organization that say he's done for the year. And having said that, my impressions are that if they are actually claiming forearm tightness, that has been a precursor for the need for Tommy John surgery or UCL surgery, whichever term you want to use. So that's concerning. I also think Verlander is the kind of person who is going to downplay injuries as much as he can. So, I mean, it's certainly worrisome because in a 60-game season, losing your best starter for even three, if everything was perfectly, minimum you'd lose him for is three starts. He'd have to work back up to some sort of effectiveness. Realistically, he may not be back even if he's completely healthy until September. Literally half the season's gone. The good news is the Astros, like everybody else, are in a baseball world where 16 teams out of 30 are going to make the playoffs. And the only benefit at this point to winning the division is the first round matchup being completely at home. Other than that, it looks like the way they've set up the playoffs is going to be a complete crapshoot. So it's a bad blow for the Astros' division hopes, not necessarily a bad blow for their playoff hopes. And hopefully Verlander is healthy and can get back as soon as possible. And to all of you Twitter followers out there who are wishing harm on him and his family and screaming karma and all the other baby crap that I've seen over the past 24 hours, go sit on your thumbs. I mean, legitimately, you're the lowest common denominator of human beings right now.
I completely agree. It's funny because I had a tweet, I think about 36 hours before, about here's how we should fan and here's how we shouldn't. And taking joy in an injury is never the way you're supposed to do it. It does seem like a lot of the older pitchers are having an issue with this start. Kluber, as you pointed out to me, went out. Kershaw with the back. Scherzer. And then Mal Giles with a similar injury, I think, to what Verlander had. Is this a fact of a 3-week ramp up? Is that a 6-week ramp up? And we can say, listen, to all you think spring training is too long, that is in fact not the case.
Absolutely. I think you even saw it with Greinke's start yesterday, who is not an overthrower by any means. He ran out of gas in the third inning, just completely lost his conditioning. And I think no matter how hard you work, and you hear this in every level of athletics, every level of sports, there is nothing that can simulate actual game performance. You can work out, you can do all the cardio, you can do pitch simulated games, but nothing can simulate being in an actual game, even a spring training game. And so having only 3 weeks of that, and we saw Greinke we only saw him pitch once, so those were a lot more inter-squad games. I don't know how much your adrenaline gets pumping in those as they would against even the Mariners, God love them, who are, you know, tied for third place in the division. Good for them. I'm less worried about him, but you see this all around the league where you've got your older starters who needed that time to get healthy and are trying to go 5, 6, 7 innings and just don't have the ability to do that right now because of conditioning and just being in shape. And what that's going to lead to is exactly what we've seen, people having aches and pains that you would normally associate with the first or second week of spring training.
So let's look at the Astros now. Do you feel like they're still the favorites in the division?
I think you've got to give it to the A's at this point. But that, again, is pending whatever injuries they're going to come up with. The Astros' big weakness going into the season was pitching, starting pitching in bullpen. If you're going to fill the gap by Verlander, it's going to be somebody that's coming out of the bullpen at this point, unless they go crazy and put Whitley in the starting lineup. Just let's see what happens, Dusty Baker magic kind of thing, which means you're going to take a Brian Abreu, for instance, or a Cy Snead out of the bullpen, put them in a rotation, which means you're weakening your bullpen even more than it's already weak. And we saw yesterday what our bullpen really looks like. Davinsky should not be facing more than two batters. And that's not a realistic thing anymore.
Right. So let's look at the broader MLB now before I go to my follow-up Astros question for you. As of this minute, the Phillies-Yankees game canceled. The Marlins, whoever they were playing, game canceled. The number of positives has gone from 4 to, I think, 11 now.
14 total.
14 total. And the best part of all of this was that the Marlins knew yesterday that they had these positives and still elected to play. One, why is it their decision? And two, does this mean, like, is there any incentive to try to make a move to replace Verlander and try to win a championship that might not happen?
No, I don't think and even if the Astros were in a position that they could deal prospects, unless it was being able to acquire somebody that you'd have for the next 3 years, it makes zero sense to make panic moves this year to get into a expanded playoff field to potentially win a championship that every other fan base is going to tell you is illegitimate anyway.
Okay, these cancellations, does that add fuel to the fire that we're not finishing the season to you?
Absolutely. I think the Marlins have violated kind of the basic tenet of how this could possibly work, is that all 30 teams have to trust one another. They have now demonstrated that they're not trustworthy by playing players that they knew to be positive and exposing not only their own roster, but an entire another team, which is, because it was a travel day, affecting another game with the Yankees coming into the Phillies. So now you've got the Phillies, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Marlins out. The Marlins, half of their team, I think of those 14 cases, at least two were staffers. So let's say you have 11 or 12. You're going to have to replace those players because realistically, if they tested positive, the math is a little fuzzy, but generally you can expect them to be out 14 days before they can come back. So if that's the case, you now have to come up with half of a team. And I guess they're going to get that from their alternate site, but those were players that the Marlins, keep in mind, the Marlins didn't think were good enough to be in the majors. And you could say that about their original 30 too, not good enough to be in the majors. So you're really now talking about double A guys who really, really, really aren't ready to be in the majors and facing even the Orioles, which is who they would be playing tonight. Violating that trust, A, is one. If I can't, and this we talk about this a lot, the 30 teams that operate independently of one another with no kind of camaraderie, teamwork, whatever, this is just another symptom of that. Why would I have to tell you about my medical conditions that might affect your entire team? Blah, 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 blah. Now, it's interesting to me that the Yankees game was canceled, and I'm wondering if that was any other team but the Yankees. Would they have just said, hey, the locker room has been cleaned, you're fine?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always a valid question when it comes to those guys. I guess, you know, as we circle back to how this affects the Astros, I mean, I don't know. Like, I hate the idea of saying the season's not going to be what it was going to be, but it seems like 2020 is just going to keep 2020-ing us.
Yeah, I think this is – I don't think they're going to – they do have an emergency meeting, I guess, scheduled for today, the MLB executives and owners. I don't think this is necessarily going to be the death knell, but it is – if there's a straw that broke the camel's back, this is the straw before that. There's no way they can do this twice. So if you have – and I'll just pick a team. I'm not picking on the Royals, but the Royals, who decide they're going to play their prospects and they're all positive and it affects – this happens again, the season's shut down. And I think every one of the franchises has to understand that. And I would see lawsuits flying all over the map if that was to happen again. But the, you know, the bigger question of how it affects baseball, how it affects the Astros, how it affects MLB, I don't see any way if you can spread to 14 people in one day with limited exposure, because they are practicing some sort of social distancing. Most players are wearing masks when they're running the bases. You know, they're trying. I don't see any way you get through 60 days of this. Not unless a vaccine shows up next week, which it's not. For the Astros, I think you just play out the string as long as you play the string. Your offense is still going to be superior. I see Alvarez coming back probably next week. I don't know what conditioning he has, but how much conditioning does he need to have to trot around the bases after he's destroyed a ball into the upper deck? You don't have to run hard. Pitching is a bigger concern, but I think you go from seeing a bunch of 7-2 games to a bunch of 9-8 games or 9-7 games, which, you know, for those of us that like well-played baseball games, is going to be really, really ugly. But that's kind of what 2020 is. It's really, really ugly.
And do you see a shot for Whitley? Do you see them just saying, let's roll the dice on Whitley for that fifth starter?
No. They'll run through – you've got James tonight, assuming games are still played. You've got James tonight. You've got Framber Valdez going against the Dodgers on Tuesday, I believe. And then I'm pretty sure they're going to pull a bullpen game, probably starter Abreu. Because he will have not pitched for 3 days at that point, and try to get through one more round of the rotation before you have to make a real decision on a starter. It could be a number of candidates, but I see them going from an internal guy a little bit farther up the food chain than Taylor Whitley right now.
Okay, last question then. Dusty Baker seems to not know how to use a DH. This is the second for two of the three games he has pinch hit for his DH middle of the game. Is he still feeling his way out, or do you think it's more he's feeling his way out of the roster in general?
I think it's feeling your way out of the roster in general. I think you left Florida with an understanding of what your roster was going to look like, and it's changed a little bit. Alvarez not being there means you've got this spot that you don't have to – if Alvarez is healthy and playing, and had been in the summer camp. He's your DH. He's probably batting fifth. Everything else kind of comes into focus. And, you know, your platoon is in right field with Tucker and Reddick. Instead, we've seen a diet of Tucker and Aledmys Diaz and I can't remember, Tyler Jones?
Taylor Jones. Tyler was the pitcher who pitched well.
Okay. Yeah. Tyler Jones, whatever his name is, he should not be in the major leagues. As witnessed by how he got eaten up yesterday by any breaking ball.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, the Pokemon guy playing for Seattle literally just threw three fastballs down the middle, and he's so tied up, he couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
I think when Alvarez gets back, that fixes itself. I think Dusty is really just play. He's not stupid. He does play doddering old man sometimes, but he's not a dumb guy. He right. does understand how baseball works. I just think it's more of a, let's see what we got and see if, you know, we get lightning in a bottle with Jones coming up. Maybe he's inspired to make his major league debut.
All right, Andy, will you enjoy the rest of your staycation as best as you can?
Yeah, as soon as this hurricane remnants clears out, maybe I can get in the pool. Who knows?
The Minor League Mind with Jess Canaster.
So we are back with the Minor League Mind, and even though there is no affiliated minor league baseball, we still want to think about it. And who better to think about it than Jess Canaster, our minor league guru, if you will. First, Jess, how's everything going over there? You guys safe? You guys sound? What's going on?
We're staying good. We're doing well. My wife and I adopted a dog. I think we had just gotten her right before we talked last time. So it's been a nice injection of happiness and a nice distraction with nothing else. I mean, there's coming sports on, so that certainly is a thing, although there's varying opinions on sports and resources and whatnot with that. But, you know, having a dog, I think there's no con. It's all pros. So that's kind of been our energy, more so than it will be, actually probably not any more so than it will be
right,
moving forward, because she's the first addition to our family. And so it's been nice. And was looking at the calendar today, and we're on the back half of July. And having worked in minor league baseball since 2015 and in baseball altogether since 2014, to be at the end of July and not feel some sense of relief at the coming end of the season and then just one more month, it's really weird, because that has how my calendar has worked the last few years. And my internal calendar, it's, oh, we're at the end of July. I know that because I'm exhausted, but I'm okay with it. And I will get to sleep in September.
Right. It's such a shock for everyone, the idea that we had our MLB preview show, by the time this airs, 4 days ago, because the season started in July. And because I'm recording this before we drop it, hell, for all we know, the season could have been shut down already. We just don't know. before we jump into what I want to talk about, which is one baseball or whatever they're calling it, what is your sense about the odds that we're going to get through a Major League Baseball season?
I think there is going to be pressure to sweep anything that would keep the Major League Baseball season from finishing, sweep that under the rug, because MLS is getting through a tournament with, they had a couple hiccups at the beginning, but they're powering through it, and they're almost on to their playoff stage of their tournament. The NBA starts very shortly. The NHL starts very shortly. And there have been so few so few incidents of lack of organization that it sure seems like Major League Baseball has a standard, a new standard to uphold. And if they want to be seen in the same light as those other organizations at all costs, they need to get through their season. And where the real wild card is they're about to start really traveling. I mean, teams, they played first rounds of games yesterday, and there are games of teams who don't live, you know, their homes are not in Florida or California or Texas, and they're going to be going to those places. And the way that things have been handled with the Toronto Blue Jays not being able to play games at home in Toronto doesn't really give much inspiration that they know how to handle any sort of issues. I saw a headline. I didn't get a chance to read the article, but a headline about, you know, what happens if Major League Baseball players get sick on the road.
Oh, the answer is they don't know, or they won't tell us. Spoiler alert. The article says we prefer not to go through that protocol until it happens.
So that means there is none.
That means there is none. One of the things, speaking of articles that caught my eye, and one of the things that I love having you on this segment is I think you have this ability, you're a pretty introspective guy, you have this ability to think deeper into things. And there was an article that I shared with you, I think in Baseball America, does that sound right?
Yeah.
About the suspected, was it One Baseball is what they're calling it? And it's very, very Rob Manfred's Dr. Evil thing. Real quick, break down what you see, in layman's terms, what is Manfred's One Baseball plan? And then we'll talk about whether we think it's good or not.
I mean, I think, very simply, One Baseball is his version of creating a federation to oversee all of baseball. And that exists at the amateur level currently with USA Baseball. And Major League Baseball has a big financial stake. They help out USA Baseball with quite a bit. And so, you know, that's the good side, is they want to increase what they're doing, continue to increase what they're doing with amateur baseball. But I think where it becomes hairy, and where it the potential for evil or just not proper practice, is they also want to do that with pro baseball. And I think there's a major issue with one league being in charge of all other leagues. That's not how any other umbrella organization works in organized sport in this country, or if they're trying to pattern after like the English Football Association or any other soccer federations around the world. That's not how that works. There's a governing body that's separate, and the governing body is in charge of the leagues, not the leagues are in charge of the other leagues. And I think that's really where it can stand to be a big issue. Boiling it back down, on the surface, I think it's a cool plan of wanting to organize baseball as a whole, have one solid everything, have rules that are the same, have real fluidity. But I think who wants to be in charge of it is the issue.
Here's where the red flag kind of came up for me. You and I, you have worked for a collegiate summer league team from before. I think Northwoods League, right?
Yes, the St. Cloud Rocks, who you visited a couple of weeks ago.
That's right, the St. Cloud Rocks. So the St. Cloud Rocks, every time there is a rival to professional football, to the NFL, the NFL is able to either directly or indirectly squash it. My concern with this One Baseball nonsense is, what do we do when it comes to, how does this affect independent league baseball that aren't part of affiliated minor league baseball or collegiate summer league, which I do think Major League Baseball is about to double down on collegiate summer league because they're killing the minors in the first place. Anything about that raise a red flag for you?
Well, that was actually the juicy nugget that was buried right in the middle of that article, was that there have been conversations with independent league team or within independent leagues. There, obviously, Major League Baseball last year had the partnership with the Atlantic League, and they tried some of those new rules, the robot umpires stealing first base and other stuff with the Atlantic League. But I guess supposedly they've also been talking to the American Association and the Frontier League, among others. And it was posited by the author, J.J. Cooper, that there was a chance that Major League Baseball, if they can't come to some sort of agreement with Minor League Baseball, that they would let the PBA expire completely at the end of September. So September 30th is when it goes up, and then form a new minor league system the way that they want it to, using some of these independent league cities. And so I think from that aspect, that's got to raise a red flag, maybe not with the independent league teams, but with the minor league teams too. And it sure seems like they're trying to create some division, whether they are purposefully or not, they are creating some division, because there are minor league teams that want to have Major League Baseball help. And there are minor league teams that recognize what that might mean and want to keep their independence and are financially able to keep their independence, don't need Major League Baseball's help, don't want Major League Baseball's help. And so I think from a standpoint of the independent leagues, maybe not, but I mean, I think at the end of the day, Major League Baseball is the de facto governing body of, or I guess it's the de facto representation of professional baseball in the U.S. and at least currently around the world. The best baseball players play here, but who knows how much longer that might go for, the way the players have been treated at various points. But to kind of branch off of that, I think the biggest issue might be with collegiate summer leagues, because part of this plan is that they spoke with the head coach of Michigan baseball, Eric Backich. Right. And he is on board with moving the college baseball season back into July, which that's a big issue for college summer teams, because college summer teams are not going to get players from colleges if they are still playing. And as it currently stands, college summer teams don't get, they'll sign players who are on College World Series teams, and then they'll just get there after the College World Series ends. But if they don't get, or if they can't get any players until July, there's no season. And so for those teams, that's a big issue. And I think if Major League Baseball is going to have a financial stake in minor league baseball, and collegiate summer league, especially like low A or high A and college players, there's very little difference at that point. And so I think that's where the real red flag is for me with leagues and teams that could be in trouble if Major League Baseball gets their claws into minor league baseball the way they want, and then they start to shift stuff around.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, because for me, part of my big issue with, because I've read a lot of, because I've also read that MLB is actually going to invest in college summer leagues and increase the number. I don't know that MLB will necessarily allow the college baseball season to go any later. I've seen it starting later because Northern schools can't play, right? They can't play at home. And I also think that there's some sort of where outside of the playoffs, like, you kind of have to be in class while a regular season is occurring. And if it's the summer, you're not anymore. Like, generally speaking, the regular season does end when the semester ends.
That's when the student athlete label kind of gets blurred even more than it already is. I mean, the fact that, speaking to current events with college football, that lots of colleges are expecting, or college coaches are expecting and wanting their players to play, even though classes may not be happening on campus, and they'd be happening digitally, and therefore no students would be on campus, only the student athletes would be on campus.
And, yeah, I guess I have less of an issue with that. To me, that's a natural expediency of the moment, not a cultural change, which is what it would be if, COVID, we all got to give a little, and you're still taking classes. And I guess if we're supposed to buy that online classes still count, then they count. I guess for me, the issue would be Northern schools are the only ones who wanted to go that late, and I don't see them having enough. Let's be honest. Nobody cares about Big Ten baseball.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And so I've switched out that bobblehead for another one, my Justin Verlander bobblehead. You know, as we wrap the show up, I'll set the strikeouts back to zero in case he's not coming back this year. Ironically enough, his arm had to be super glued on, so it seems fitting. Yeah, obviously, the Justin Verlander news was a shock to everybody in the Astros. And I think I wish that fan bases didn't feel the need to take pleasure in an injury. And look, I get it that they're mad and they don't understand the full situation with the sign stealing, and that's fine. And you're allowed to have opinions. But I think that we cross the line when we wish pain and injury on people. The replies to all of that have been awful. And I almost wish that people could like screen grab those. And then like when it's time for you to meet to go to judgment day, you could be like, look at this opportunity. You had to be a good person. And instead you chose to be a terrible person. You know, and there's been a lot of talk about what the Astros should or shouldn't do. And I don't think they should do anything crazy to try to salvage a season that I honestly think won't be finished. And I'm not sure should be finished. And, you know, I think part of the reason why so many of these leagues went to pods, the Savannah Bananas are playing in a much more constricted situation. Sugarland Skeeters in the Constellation Energy League pod, the Wild West League up in Portland. Part of the reason why you do that is because you can control things. You can keep things managed as far as exposure goes. You can't do that playing a 60-game major league season when you travel. And as we record this, there's no Yankee game tonight. There's no Marlins-Orioles game tonight. And I don't know that I think that the season should continue. I don't know that there's any degree of common sense involved with trying to keep the season going. And look, I know that there are still people who doubt how serious the virus is. And then there's still a lot of information that we don't know. Like that's the thing. We don't know. We don't know if it really is something that people that their age gets over. We don't know if it's going to lead to long-term health effects. We don't know if those long-term health effects that we think it will lead to will actually be long. We don't know. And it feels like just from a public relations perspective, they've now walked into a situation where they probably should shut down. 11, 12, 13, 14 people on one team that got it. We know how contagious it is. We don't know if anybody in the Phillies got it. Like, it seems like the last thing you want to do is push through and then risk another outbreak like this and then force yourself to shut down. I think the nature of baseball with the number of games and the amount of traveling actually will make it much harder than other sports, even the sports where you play close contact, because like in football, you play once a week. So, you know, I will obviously keep watching as long as there are games, but I just really feel like the smart thing to do would be to go back to the drawing board for 2021. So that's just my take. We have a great show coming up for you on Friday. The Joliet Slammers are going to be here. We will be prepping for our return trip. Jessica and I are going to be heading out to Constellation Energy Field. We're going to be talking to some folks from the CPBL. We're going to be revisiting, that's right, the Chinese Professional Baseball League. Andrew Nelson will be here for Raiders of the Lost Diamond for his first time to contribute to that segment. A lot coming up next week, so we hope you stay with us. And until next time, let's get to it.